To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
All right, you heard the song. You're back, this is, you know who we are. This is Iron Dawn,
Al, and Rook.
You know, Rook, have you ever noticed that Al and Dallas are never in the same room?
Yeah, what's that?
It's starting to get suspicious.
Am I misremembering, or did we ever do shows with all of them, or am I just thinking, is that just my imagination?
It's just your imagination. Once again, run away with me. That was another Stones song that they played a lot.
Stones?
They did it. The Stones covered that song on Girls. They used to play it a lot on the show. On the rock station, but it's really Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
The Temptations. Smokey Robinson wrote it. Temptations showed him how to do it.
Okay. Are we recording? Anyway,
and I want to start the show with, there is no getting into the future except by waiting.
Oh, wow, that's deep.
All right, I'm coming to the show, and I've got something to talk about.
Me too.
All right, well, we all have something, but I'm starting this thing off. Everybody knows I love the comic. I've tried everything I could to desperately get you guys to read it. They just made a major motion picture, and I bought
it. He's talking about.
I bought it again, boys.
Oh, let's see. And if anybody can't guess what he's talking about, it is Valerian.
Valerian is absolutely one of my top favorite comic series.
Right next to Squirrel Girl, right?
Have you ever read that, Rook?
Squirrel Girl?
Yeah, that issue I gave you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It won like an award.
Well, it's fun.
I grabbed a bunch of, not a bunch, but I grabbed a copy of Squirrel Girl at Free Comic Book Day as well.
Okay, well, actually, I've got them. I got two more issues that I'll bring on if you liked it. I found in a dollar box that I've read and enjoyed, but, you know.
There's a guy online that destroys.
Well,
anyway,
you shouldn't be doing that. If you don't like it, that's fine. Don't buy it, and that's okay, but it's a nice book. But, you know, one thing, not trying to get off the subject here, but...
Because we were talking about Valeria.
But the girl that draws Squirrel Girl, somebody posted her drawing, inking a page. And I really enjoyed that. And I think she's basically basing Squirrel Girl off of her own appearance, which
I
like.
I'm sure she is.
It was really fun to watch her create the page. I didn't have the sound on because she was talking and holding a bunch of stuffed animals.
Hey, the book won some award at Comic-Con.
And rightly so. And it has an audience, I'm glad, but I've read a few issues. I made Rook read one.
But I am not a fan.
Okay, well, and that's fine, but you shouldn't destroy something.
Not everybody has to be a fan of everything. Squirrel Girl, I think, here's the thing that I love about Squirrel Girl, because here's what annoys me about modern comics, okay? We all grew up with all these different characters, and none of them changed or evolved really that much. And now we're all older trying to read these books. But yet kids try and read these books and they're lost.
They're not writing them for kids.
Right. Squirrel Girl is like a preteen, teen-style comic book. Mm-hmm. And I think it's fun. I think it's great. And I think it's the character that's going to open the gateways to the next generation of readers. That's what I think Squirrel Girl is.
Yeah.
And I have absolutely no problem with her that way. I think it's fantastic.
I mean, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but I will be. I don't think there's going to be a next generation of readers. I think it's over with us. I think we're taking it with us. I don't want to be like depressing guy either.
I think it's just going to take another form.
It might take another form.
But I see other people reading them. It's a couple of things. Is what Rook was saying. All these books have been around forever, and they're being written for guys in our age group. You know, both Dallas and Rook's and mine and yours. But I do see new people coming in.
Do you know who created Squirrel Girl?
I do not, offhand.
It was the writer.
Yeah, and who's the artist on the original Squirrel Girl?
I don't know.
It was in Marvel Comics Presents. You'd be surprised at who it was.
Oh, Squirrel Girl's an older character?
Uh-huh. Steve Ditko was involved in the creation of Squirrel Girl.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, just look it up. I was told that the other day, and I'm like, Squirrel Girl appeared in Marvel Comics Presents.
Wow.
Yeah,
I never knew
so
that.
Believe it or not, you know, so it's like, okay, she looked completely different.
But I do think that these kind of series like that, it's It's not a lot. It goes into the Marvel continuity, but it's not tons of backstory that people don't know. It's an entry point. It's something that younger readers can relate to, but older readers like myself can still enjoy it.
They're trying to bring in females.
And they're doing it.
Yeah.
But it's like I told somebody.
It's not just with Squirrel Girls. There's
a lot of their books they are. Yeah.
There's so many female readers out there right now, along with creators. It's a whole different ballgame out there now.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I was talking to somebody about a friend, and he goes, that's not true. And I go, well, I mean, maybe it's not 100% true, but I can gauge the lineage from when comic books became more, because they changed from being art driven to writer driven, and I can see the sales going downwards. Now, on the other hand, I think comic books, Marvel and DC's, are more written than they were bought by Disney, so they're bought by licensing and merchandising and movies. You know what I mean? So I don't see the comic books unless some new characters come up and change the world. You know what I mean? And because they're not gonna change the world by, you know, changing the sex and the gender of characters like Thor or doing all these more. They're gonna change the world by creating new characters. So that will open it up, my opinion, to a newer audience. But at this point, it's like Don said, I don't see the future of comics and paper.
Mm.
It's gonna be sad, but I don't see it.
That one actually could be. Anyway, but getting away from Squirrel Girl, which I didn't mean to do.
I did it.
I've been reading Valerian since 82. I could only read four of the albums, but they were the thin albums as I've shown you guys, which I do like. I prefer. They put out these hardbacks, and it's basically the first three stories. The reason I bought it, I had no intention. Some of our friends, Scott Connor, was excited about it. Mark Cherie said his girlfriend's mad at me because he pre-ordered the first three, which don't blame me on your girlfriend.
Cause
I'm sorry she's upset, but I wasn't not done all three. I understand, but they're nice. It's got artwork. It's got write-ups about it. It's got stuff about the movie. It has some quick interviews with the creators of the thing. Has Luc Besson talk about how he liked the book. The reason I bought this one was the first story of how Valerian met Loreline. I've never been able to read. And I've read people online complaining that I guess younger French people have never seen it either, even in France. I guess it originally ran in Pilot magazine, Pilot, I don't know what they call it. But the first story ran in 66 or 67. Like, it seemed like everything happened at that period of time. But I guess about 10 or 20 years ago, it was about 10 years after the series started, they put out a volume from that first story. Never printed again. But he met Loreline, I thought it was a 14th century France. Come to find out it's 11th century France. But Loreline helped him, figured out he wasn't from there, and he couldn't do anything but bring her back, and then they trained her, and she became his partner. So that's why I ordered this thing. It's nice. It's thick. The first story, some people complain, and I do say this, if you do read Valerian, it's better if you start with some of the later work, like the sixth story, Ambassador of the Shadows. The earlier work is nice. It's one of those things, if you really like the later work, you'll enjoy the earlier work. But if you start at the earlier work, it gets better. The first story, some people complained about the crudeness of the artwork. I would give all of my teeth and my left leg and right arm if I could do one story this good. Nevertheless, the best is yet to come. The one thing that blows my mind was the second story, which is the first of these trades, The City of Shifting Waters. I bought this. Al and I talked about the show way back, and it was good. Again, it's an earlier style. But they cut out about 22 pages out of that story to fit it in that volume.
They did? It was in there?
And they talk about it in here. So not only are you getting the first story, which you can't get anywhere else, but The City of Shifting Waters is in two parts. And it's kind of clever how they did it. I thought they just removed pages. But I'm looking, the top, there's one point, I don't remember this, but what they did was they removed one half, the bottom half to one page, and then the top half of another page later on. You're missing a page or two in between. And J.C. Mezieres redrew the panel to fit it in.
Oh,
and okay. it's based off the other panel, but it's a different angle, a different drawing. So it's not a hack job what they did. But they were moving pages here and there. And at one point, I don't know if they're in Wyoming, but they meet this rancher. I don't remember this guy. And there's like, I don't know, 8 to 10 pages. That whole segment, because they're going through and they go through a city where people can't get food and they're stuck there. And the rancher's with Valerian and Lorelei, and then he finally, you know, when they're moving on, he's helping them. He says, look, he says, he had a herd. He was, you know, going to die. And he says, I'm not going to go any further with you guys. I'm gonna move on. I'm going to go back and get my herd to feed these people, and we're going to take care of it. It's pretty cool. They removed the whole section. And all through the book, I was going through it, and there were sections where they removed a half a page or a full page, and then he redrew in something to fit it.
Is this the first one here?
Yeah, the first of the volumes.
Yeah, you know, I forgot. I hadn't looked for it in a while. His art did change a lot.
Yeah, it looks more like
looks more like a cartoon or something.
Yeah, it's very, very like campy, kind of cartoony.
Yeah.
Like
comic strip.
Well, it's like Sunday Funnies.
Yeah.
A lot of French comics, the most famous one is Asterix, which is one of my favorite comics by René Goscinny and Albert Uderzo, I think is how you say their names. It's about the Gauls during the Roman Empire. And then another one that's really popular is about a cowboy called Lucky Luke. And they say he's faster than his own shadow. And this Valerian style is drawn more like Lucky Luke and Asterix, even though he's his own man. But it's like anything, when you keep working, you know, your work changes into something else. But anyway, these volumes, the last one is Empire of 1,000 Planets, and that's the one that really starts to turn into what Valerian became, so it's the third story. I didn't check with the old volume to see, I think there's some extra pages too, because what they were doing was, instead of keeping the whole story intact, they tried to fit it into a thin volume, as all the French books do. And I think after that, maybe not so much change, so now they've been putting out some Valerian stories that I haven't bought one because I was saving my money for that hike I did with my brother last summer. It's kind of chomping at the bit because I wanted to buy them. But then I thought, well, now they're putting out these volumes, and I don't know, maybe I haven't decided yet. I got these. I like the softback volumes, but I don't know what to do because this is like prime cuts here. Anyway.
But here you go. Here's why, like we were talking about in the car, the real guys in this movie are Mezier and the writer. The writer is Christine,
yeah,
right?
Christine. Yeah.
Luc Besson's name gets put a little bigger on there. It goes from the movie by Luc Besson. It's
on
like,
a sticker.
On a sticker, yeah. And we were talking in the car, and I go like, you know, I watched like the trailer for the movie, and somebody was talking about it online, and the amount of people that actually it took to make this movie. And this comic book is done by maybe 2 or 3 guys. And, you know, it's like 2 or 3 guys can create this, and it takes 8 million people to make a movie. I think the art is really in this. I really do think the art is in the comic book.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, you have 2 or 3 guys to thank for how
Marvel,
many people's
Jack
jobs
Kirby,
now. Yeah. Those 2 or 3 guys that created that comic book are now gave how many different people a chance to do,
yeah, they gave
work,
all, they gave, but it's like, but then
something.
The comic book becomes secondary to the movie.
But the comic book is always the original source.
It's always the original, and that's what I mean. That is the source, and that is the art. The movie is
at least with Valerian. They talk about it in the previews that it comes from the graphic novels. Blah blah blah.
But
blah, blah.
From what I've read, people went into it and didn't do well at the beginning because people didn't know what it is. You know, they just threw it at you and they go, oh, it's from a comic book that you've never seen before.
Oh, Valerian?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I will say, people complained about the Marvel movies that when Iron Man did so well that they never said this is based off the comic book, I'm told. And they said they should have had comic books or something out there. And I've always heard
something.
The question about, do these movies translate into comic sales? But Valerian, they're constantly, whenever they post this on Facebook or any article, they always bring up the French comic. They had that free comic, you know, that it put out.
No, I understand that, but a guy who just says, oh, look, it's a new sci-fi movie, and a lot of people that don't go to Free Comic Book Day, that just go to the movies because they want to see a superhero movie.
But
or
in the previews, they are saying it.
They are saying it, but these aren't easy to find books.
No, but if you go to a comic book shop, they can direct you. I mean, that's the thing. You go to Amazon, you can find it.
I will say this, and when I say this, I'm going to bag on you guys because you're my friends. I've been trying to get these guys, as I said earlier, read these, and they just kind of gloss over it and humor me. But
well, that's because I go to Yancey Street and I buy like 25 comics.
I'm just busting your chops, and that's fine. You know, you shouldn't be strong arm, but I'm happy to say.
Hey, I've got an interest in French comics too, just not that one. Okay,
yeah, so
this is French comics are great, but this is the one besides Mobius that you should be reading. But anyway, saying
and I'm not even referring to Mobius.
But Scott Connor, my our friend, the listener. He did say he's interested. He's been ordering them. Mark Cherey said he's heard me talk about his interest, and now that the movie's coming out, James Perry have looked at it. So a lot of people have been picking this thing up and looking at it and ordering it, finding them. My buddy Britt went to see it, and on his Facebook page, he wrote his thoughts on the movie. He always writes up movie reviews, and another cartoonist, Steve Irwin, came on. And talks, I thought it was based off a video game. He never heard of the comic. And Britt says, you're going to be seeing these at bookstores all over the place, which I'm hoping for. It's made an interest. I was reading some, I don't know, it was a podcast they put out from, I don't know if it was the New York Times or New York Book Review or something, but it was about comics. I think they had Heidi McDonald on it sometimes, and some of these other people. And they started talking about the Valerian books from Cinebook. And they said that they're selling really well. Before the movie ever came out, the books are selling well. Okay, I've bought every one of them. I went to see the movie last week, my wife and I, and I couldn't even sit with her. The movie was so packed, we had to sit, and she sat behind me. And that thing was finished, everybody's excited. My wife said, honey, that was so good. She was just squealing. She goes, before we left here, you're going to buy that on DVD. The movie was awesome. Al always teased me when I talk about this. I think you're setting yourself up, because that's it, setting yourself up for disappointment, because I'm so close to the comic material. I don't particularly like movies based off comics, as everybody knows that.
So you're telling me they did a better job translating it to from comic to movie than they did with Ghost Rider?
Well, then a lot of movies. Telling you, I really liked the Rocketeer movie. It had the same feel as the Dave Stevens work. That was always my favorite. Since then, they've done some other ones that I thought were not too bad.
You liked the Guardians of the Galaxy you liked?
Yeah, I liked it. The second one I saw, I never saw the first one. Saying that, though, I'm not going to buy it. I have no intention to buy it, but I had a blast at the theater. It was a good film, and if it's on TV, it's worth watching. This one, I like the comic better. Don't get me wrong. The comic is just, to me, the second to none.
Okay.
But they did a good job, and they changed some of the things quite a bit. But I didn't mind the changes they made. I guess the only
thing
I read some things people talk about. I wish the actor they got to play Valerian, I thought was fine. I had no problem with him. I wish he was a little bit older.
I was going to say, that's what people were saying.
Yeah, he looks, the two of them look very young for the roles.
No, Laureline, I think they call her. I wasn't too sure because whenever they had stills, she looked kind of evil, people would say.
She's a model.
But when you see her, she's great. And I think you said somebody saying she couldn't act.
They're bagging on her.
I don't know who was bagging on her, but she was terrific. And that was my wife's favorite. My wife always cheers for the girls. But when I read these in 82, I was shocked at Laureline. As I've said all the time, I was shocked at what a strong female character she was. She's a really strong character. And at the time, she was the strongest female character I had ever read. And some of the American comics writers were talking about that back in 82. It says, wow, she's a strong female. Before they had, Red Sonja I thought was always kind of strong, but, she was always second to Conan.
Well, if you go back to the 40s and 50s, people don't realize this. There was a ton of female superheroes, tons of them. If you look through the old scans, like in Digital Comics Museum, maybe some of them may have been one off, but Phantom Lady, the patriotic female
character. What was that one we talked about? Senorita Rito?
Senorita Rita or something like that. Yeah, Senorita Rita. Rio. There was ton. Every book, because in those old books, they would have, like, a lot of them would have, like, a 50-page book with tons of characters, with tons of female characters.
But the one we were just talking about, I saw two covers. I've never read the books, but I was shocked. She wasn't, I guess she's more like an adventure character. She, I guess she was a stunt woman that spoke like 7 to 10 languages.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
And I was showing to Maria, and Maria was laughing about, she liked it, but she said she's sword fighting the guy on a ceramic roof, and she's wearing high heels. And I said, yeah, she's sword fighting. He goes, yes, Don, in high heels.
And then she also criticized the Jungle Girls for having really nice hair in the jungle. It's like, come on.
Yeah, my wife bags on. But that's funny. They're all glamorous. You know,
meanwhile, the dude that flies around with laser vision and a cape is totally fine. She has no problem with that. And his spit curl.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Suspend disbelief here, kids.
It's comic book.
As far as all the people who worked on the film, one thing... J.C. Mazieres, who was the artist of the series, was always getting upset at Luc Besson for not, when he did The Fifth Element, why don't you do Valerian? Well, The Fifth Element is a great film, but he always brought up the technology wasn't there, because it's just so full of... J.C. Mazieres could just conceive of anything, his education was industrial design, he had fantastic spacecraft, none of them looked the same. Aliens all over the place, and he never stopped making up bizarre stuff. And he said there's no way he could create all these alien forms the way in technology from The Fifth Element. In Valerian, it's when he saw Avatar, it's when he realized he could do it.
But Fifth Element was all practical effects,
yeah,
as far as I can tell and I remember. That was all practical effects makeup.
Was that before CGI?
It wasn't before CGI.
It was early CGI.
It was early enough in the CGI that they still used almost all practical effects. And it's something I love practical effects makeup.
They're better.
Not only are they better, but it's such a craft. It's, you can't just be a good artist. You have to be a good artist, a good sculptor. You have to know how to apply that stuff. You have to know how to paint.
And solve problems, too.
Oh, that's problem solving is a huge portion of it.
And here's another thing, too. If you see a monster or whatever, a horror movie, let's say somebody does a new Jason movie and he's all CGI. You know he's a cartoon. But when it's a guy in a suit... This gives you an extra. It gives you an extra, like, oh man, this
little
is a
bit
real
of extra creepy.
Real, it's more real. But if it's a cartoon, it's like, oh, that's a great effect.
Yeah.
And when it's an effect, it kind of in a lot. Sometimes, not always. Mm. Sometimes it kind of like takes away the edge of.
How was the transition between practical and effects on the movie? Did they do? I mean,
they changed
At any point, could you sit there going, "Well, that's a fake background."
Video game.
Basically, the whole movie seemed, it was all consistent all the way through. One thing, when you're talking about all the people that worked in the film, he used both ILM and Weta Workshop.
Oh, jeez.
Both. I mean, both of them. And it was, if you ever read about the Valerian movie, he compared it to Fifth Element, that I guess in Fifth Element he had 200 and something shots. Special effects system was like, 200,000 or something. It was massive.
That's a lot.
But... it always seemed, suspension of disbelief. The only problem I had in the whole movie was, and they show this in the trailers, is when they're out in that deserty beach area, and they're wearing the cabana wear, and they're jumping off of a bus onto the platform of his ship. That's the only problem I have, because it looks like really slow wire work. It doesn't look like a guy and a girl jumping onto something. It looks like it's fake. And that's that's always irritated me. Like, I'm used to watching Jackie Chan films where you can see an actual human being jump, even though they're incredible. That one, I'm like, oh, come on. But the rest of it was fantastic. My wife loved a lot of the aliens. The scene with Rihanna, which I hate to say it, that really stole the show. And that wasn't really in them. In Ambassador of the Shadows, Laura Lynn gets a holo makeup to look like one of these creatures. And she's trying to find Valerian, so she has to put this on and go through it. In the movie, Valerian has to go on this forbidden sector, and he finds Rihanna, which is a shapeshifter, and then she turns Valerian into this creature that Loreline was in the comic, and she goes in. Fantastic. You know, she was a character called Bubble, and that was, I think, my wife's favorite. She says, I love that. Some of the aliens in Ambassador Shadows at the end, when they meet them, they're the people that start the movie out, but they changed them into these aquatic seashell people, whereas in the comic, they were really tan, blue-eyed people that lived out and, you know, that achieved a higher plane of existence. So, differences, but I see the logic to what they did. And when I showed Myrna the comic book, she goes, I like the movie went better. But it's got a lot of interest in the comic. What I'm happy about is I can find the comic. I can actually, I hate to say it, but I think I'm jumping off the bridge and buying two copies of each one of these, which I really hate to do, but I'm that fanatic with it.
At least you can find your French comic, so be happy.
Yeah, so that's what I mean.
I can't even find mine.
What are you looking for?
Snowpiercer.
I'm not familiar with that one.
So a few years back, Chris Evans, the guy who plays Captain America.
Chris Evans.
Yeah, okay, it is Chris Evans. Did a movie called Snowpiercer.
Okay.
Very under the radar. Nobody noticed it. I didn't even realize it was him the first time I watched the damn movie. Brilliant, brilliant movie. End of the world. Everybody's on this train that's circumnavigating the globe. Everything like that. You get off the train, you die. So the train is life. The people in the back of the train start a rebellion to try and take over and get better conditions. Well, Snowpiercer, I found out, was actually a French comic book. And I can't find it anywhere except for online.
Sure.
You know, I actually went to Yancey and talked to them about it, and they were like, oh, yeah, well, I mean, we could order it, but you can probably get it for cheaper online.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those. So, you know, and the worst part is Chris Evans is huge. He's a huge actor, right? People, like, now all of a sudden everybody's like, man, this movie's freaking brilliant. They're talking about a sequel to it. And you still can't find the damn comic book anywhere.
Well, you know, these Valerian books, I've yet to see them in a store.
That's what I was saying from the beginning.
I've always ordered them online. Now, when I say that, the ones from 82 to 85, I did see in conventions, and I saw it in most, a lot of comic stores, not all of them, but a lot of comic stores. I always found them. But I've yet to see these in any store, but I've talked to some people that have seen them in some stores, not around here, but I'm guessing because they're French album size, you know, the graphic novel size, they don't carry them. But I, like I said, I love French comics. I don't like every French comic, but there's a lot that I would like to see and try that I don't want to order sight unseen unless I had a chance to thumb through it.
Right.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
But yeah, Yancey's a huge store, but there's certain books I noticed they just will not touch.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's profit versus loss. I mean, for any company, any store, it's profit versus loss. Why, if you have to order X amount of, I mean, like for specialty items, like, you know, a hardback of one of these or something like that, you know, that's one thing. You only got to order one. But, you know, if this was a running comic book that nobody had ever freaking heard of, you have to order 20 of them, and you got one idiot asking for it, you're not going to order it.
Well, thanks for calling me an idiot, but no, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying. You know, no.
No, but there are certain books that I think sells well in other places that doesn't sell in this Blade Runner biker looking audience that I noticed out here in this area you live in, pal. Don't nice. Every time you go into Yancey, do you feel a little out of place when you see all the people in there?
No,
to me, they all look
I'm
like.
Used to them,
I guess they just. I always think.
You mean, the people that work there? It's the same people I've seen for years.
I feel like I'm Ward Cleaver walking into Blade Runner time I go in that store.
No. Right now, Yancey is located inside the mall, which is a complete and total strange little universe unto itself. They're going to be moving very soon.
They are.
Yeah, they're going to move. They're going to move. What? Well, so here's the deal with our local mall. The company that owned it was not doing any repairs. Some things happened. They sold the mall. New company comes in, says, I don't care what the old company said. You These are the costs for renting. No, we're not going to fix anything. I don't care that your store has leaks in its roof, problems with rats. The food court down there has rats.
Oh, yeah. Is that why I noticed Chick-fil-A is gone?
Yeah, why do you think we're gone? I mean, literally, there are issues at that mall. So Yancey is like, okay, nothing's getting fixed, we're gone. So they're getting ready to hop the fence and head across the street. So they've already, the location is already being painted. Things are being moved slowly already.
Is it a big store also?
It's actually a little bigger than what they already have.
Is it a freestanding store?
It's going to be in the plaza right across the street.
On the plaza.
Okay. So, yep.
Good.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised there's still malls left.
I am too some days. Well, at least like out in this kind of, I mean, this area is not, for one, this area, especially down where the mall is, it's not an affluent area, okay? We get traffic from Spring Hill, we get traffic from Trinity, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not destination area.
But he does fine.
We're working on it. The local communities are working on it. There's some interesting things happening in the backgrounds that I can't talk about right now, but there's some hope and some things coming that, you know, projects that might start drawing more interest and attention
business
to this area.
Coming here and stuff like that.
Businesses, residents, tourists. So, so we'll see
what happens.
Listen, Al and I are kind of tourists coming up here.
Yeah,
so.
Really?
Yeah, you guys,
So what is he, like, within like a month or two, he'll move over?
I don't even think it's going to be in another month. I think it's sometime this month.
Shit. We're already at the end of the month, man.
Well, I mean, in August, I should say. I think it's sometime in August that he's moving.
Wow.
So, but, like, a lot of the Yancey crew is all like, yeah, you know, I was in there one day, and a lot of the crew was coming by, you know, the regular subscribers, and they're like, yeah, man, let me know when the move is. I'm right here for you. And I was like, cripe, at this rate, we'll just start, like, a fire bucket brigade across, all the way across the highway, and we'll just pass boxes.
Not on that highway.
No, not on that highway.
I don't think so.
Oh, well, hey, man, you know, if the mall's going to screw you, then screw them.
Well, a lot of malls in our area, they tore down and turned into shopping centers. They always put up a big Target.
The one in Seminole, they tore it down, a dead Seminole mall, and now it's a Seminole Center now.
Yeah. We're supposed to be getting a beautiful, like, million square foot worth of retail space being built in the next couple of years with a laundry list of high-end restaurants and things
on
like 19 that.
Or no, off 19 or off 19?
Off 19. So it's supposed to be coming, and I can't wait because hopefully it means money
and
to the
property
area.
Property values going up.
Property values will go up. You know, all kinds of different
jobs
stuff.
For people.
Yep.
Yeah. So, but anyway.
Yep.
And moving on, that's all interesting, especially if you don't live in this area.
little peek into my local
economy.
Or if
you haven't watched Valerian.
Yeah. Watch Valerian. It's good. Anyway, we got a listener mail from our friend Mark Churay, and he says, hey guys, listen to the podcast, which is episode 200, or no, I'm sorry, 202. He says, I enjoyed your guest, please help him, I think he's depressed. Just kidding. You know, talking about Dan Pritchard.
Yep.
Was he really downer?
No.
No, didn't you listen to it?
No,
he's not. No, I
didn't
listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah,
well, you've heard Dan, he's always bigger than life and exuberant.
Right, yeah.
You know, I have to admit, most Australians... Almost all Australians are always just...
Oh, they're out there.
Yeah.
they're great.
Skyping through the computer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he recorded. He's got the equipment, so...
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, it's a nice place, Australia. Anyway, he says, I want to discuss the 80s sort of Avengers. Dan liked the Avengers, but he got rid of his collection. And he was reading the 80s Avengers when Dr. Druid and those characters were in it, and... Dan was basically, the joke was, since you haven't heard it, was he's hoping that we can bring you back into the fold. And
I don't remember the 80s Avengers being that great.
Well, there you go. See?
That's pretty much what the conversation was.
And Dan, he, like I said, he liked the Avengers, he was collecting them, but way back when I got to know him, he'd complain about Dr. Druid. And in this episode, he went down the whole list. I was bagging on the Captain Marvel, that female in the white outfit. You know, which actually Dan, with sympathy, was saying that she was actually a well-written character. And it says that was an exception, but he was bagging on the Black Knight on a, you know, motorcycle and on a some type of jet bike and stuff. And, you know, he was going down, what, Star Fox?
It's a comic book.
Star Fox and stuff. Anyway, but Mark Trace says, I want to discuss the 80s Sword of Avengers. I agree with your guest that the beginning of the downfall for the title was Star Fox, which is what Dan was saying.
Star Fox.
The Captain Marvel character that was mentioned was Monica Rambeau, which was the one I was complaining about. You know, and it says she could be a cool character. It really depended on who was writing her. There was a period with that team consisting of her, Captain America, Hercules, Black Knight, Dr. Druid, Thor, and Wasp that was written by Roger Stern and drawn by John Buscema with inks by Tom Palmer, which... I think
yeah,
you would
those,
like,
yeah,
and I do too. I like them. They're all stellar. If you can deal with that team, pick up the trade Assault on Olympus. I believe they did Atlantis Attacks as well, which was also pretty good.
I was running a shop through an Atlantis Attacks. Oh God, all those issues.
and that would be a small event compared to what they do today.
There's one called Extinction too with the X-Men.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Then he goes on, this says, Marvel put out some good stuff in the 80s, but you had to pick and choose. Which I agree with.
You mean like Secret Wars?
Well, it's...
Is that the Jim Shooter era in the 80s?
Yeah, but Walt Simonson's Thor came out in the 80s.
True.
You know, True. Alan Davis did Clandestine, you know, which was
John Byrne's X-Men, Fantastic Four were in the 80s.
Early 80s, yeah, which didn't, to me, didn't age
very well.
They're
definitely better than the 90s. Even though somebody might say the 90s rocked my world.
Yeah, but there was...
But in the 90s you had Chris Claremont's X-Men. Yeah. So...
Like
but
he was doing it from the 70s.
Yeah, but
anyway.
I've never understood when I'd read about people, which it's unfathomable now, but back in the 70s, some people bought everything Marvel and DC put out every month and read them all. I've never, ever wanted to get... every book those companies ever put out. I mean,
yeah, but it was so much easier back then.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, yeah. It was what, like,
you could still
20
get
bucks.
Well, back then you could still get them in like convenience stores, right?
Yeah.
In the 80s,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, but even then, I mean, there's a lot of books. I did buy a lot of books, but I never wanted to buy every book ever put out.
In the 60s, I wanted to buy every book that was put out. I definitely want. I still want every book put out. In the 60s.
I don't have room for it. I mean, the cabinets are filling quickly.
Yeah, well, and I will say, since we've been doing this show, all of a sudden, it's just, like I said, we talked about this before, it's a good problem to have. I've always got tons of stuff I'm trying to get to read, which before I would just get something, read it, and God, I wish I had some more.
I figure if I just look at the pictures, I'm good.
All right, and finishing up his article, Dan Pritchard started talking about Comic Vine, you know, and they used to have a podcast, which, you know, we got a lot of links to Comic Vine throughout the post on the blog. And from there, we started talking about Anthony Desiato's, you know, show, My Comic Shop.
Yep.
History and
that comic shop went out of business, right? Or was sold?
Oh, he closed it.
The owner closed
it. That's why it started.
The agent guy closed there, right?
Yeah, Steve Otto.
Steve Otto, yeah.
Yeah, he ran it and he finally said that's that, and you know,
it wasn't because of business either. He was just done and tired of running.
Well, it was time. You know, but no, the store was strong, I thought, but he just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, when has your life ever been just exactly the way you want it? You know, I mean,
oh, always.
You know, it's the thing. It can
forever.
It can be good, but it could be better. And sometimes you just think, well, I mean, he was in a spot where he could close it and he was okay.
I wasn't sure. I haven't heard from him in a while.
But says, by the way, anyway, he was asking about Comics Podcast Network, which we're a part of, and thank you very much. And I post all the episodes to it. And Dan was asking if we got anything from it. And Mark says, by the way, I technically found you guys through the Comic Book Podcast Network. Woohoo!
Hey, there we go.
Google sent me there when searching, looking for podcasts related to comics. I tried a bunch, none of which had my sensibilities until I found you guys. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, well, I want to ask Mark a question, though. Did watching the Marvel movies actually make you want to go to a comic shop again? Because we have one. It's James Perry. And thank you, James Perry, for the Archie comic book. We have one. I want to find the second one. The second person out there that was inspired by the Marvel movies after I don't know how long to go back and buy comic books.
Hey, I'm going to tell you a little story here.
Okay.
I got a customer. Old man's in his 80s.
Nice. Okay?
Go in, I'm doing a service, and he's watching the Daredevil show on Netflix. And I was like, ah, you're watching Daredevil, huh? And he's like, oh, yeah, I love this stuff. He goes, this is fantastic. He goes, let me tell you something, kid. Back in my day, we used to actually be able to read these things,
yeah.
Okay? We had books that you picked up at the grocery store. The old man starts carrying on about it and everything, and I'm like, yeah, actually, there's a comic book shop up at the mall. And he looks at me and goes, I got a whole goddamn store of comics now? He was amazed by it.
Did he go?
Yeah. He went to the comic book shop, and the next time I went up there, he goes, man, he goes, I went to that shop. He goes, it's not a bunch of old farts. He goes, there's a couple of cute girls behind the counter. And, the old man loves it. He absolutely loves it. He goes, I can't get back into all that crap now. He goes, I got to live on a budget. I got to live on a budget here, kid.
Right, but
the old man is going, he's like, he's thrilled to death. He likes going up there just looking around. He going to every single comic book movie there is. And,
right on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got to tell him dollar boxes.
That's what I was thinking, dollar boxes.
I'm telling you, you know. I mean, but, yeah, it was so funny. I told him that there was a comic book shop, and he's like, they got a whole store full of them now? Like, he was amazed by this concept.
That's amazing. That's great. They've never been to a comic shop.
No, he's never been to a comic book shop.
And they've been around since the 70s. Yeah, that's awesome.
The old man opened up his eyes, man. Yeah, I mean, you know, just by talking to him about Daredevil because he was watching it on Netflix.
I guess dude can walk and do everything. Well, so yep.
That was the story of James Perry. James told us that he never grew up reading comics. It was the Marvel movies that he liked. And then he got interested. Now he's been reading like no tomorrow and drawing, as we've seen, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I made a joke when he sent the email, which I passed on to everybody. But I told James.
Hey, by the way, he's got an art blog. You might want to give later on. We'll give the address to it or whatever.
Yeah. Posted on episode 200.
I have his drawings
and the video. I have his
I've been
his
out
name.
Of loop for a while.
That's okay. Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Where I belong.
Anyway, but yeah, they brought James Perry. And anyway, I passed Mark's note on to Dan Pritchard, since it was about Dan. Dan's reply was, "Oh wow, how nice. Some people will tell you Avengers was terrible all the way through. I'm not that guy," which is true. I just say if adding Star Fox to a prized intellectual property is someone's idea of a good idea, well, they have bad ideas. And follow up, they should have better ideas, like putting someone from Alpha Flight like Puck or Snowbird. Dan Pritchard. So anyway,
okay,
that's the end of listener mail. What was Star Fox?
Wasn't he the guy that had, like, he was orange color and he had, like, he had, like, a bar or something. I think that's Star Fox.
Star Fox had a white uniform.
Then I'm confusing with another dude.
But he had that Wally Wood hair, where he had the little animal man ears in his hair.
Then I'm getting him confused with some other
dude. I thought he was Thanos' brother.
Star Fox.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. That's right.
Can you even remember what the hell
his
powers
were? He's like Wolverine.
Can you even remember his powers?
I know he flies.
I know. Yeah, that's it. That's all I can give you. I knew that Star Fox flies.
He seems to be getting ready to mess around with She-Hulk. So
I thought I saw him in the
70s. He was a DC guy.
No.
That's how important Star Fox is to Marvel Comics.
What's the Wolverine looking guy that was in the Legion?
Timberwolf.
He does look a lot like Timberwolf.
Well, let's explain about this hair. Timberwolf didn't look anything like that in the 60s. But when the fantastic Dave Cockrum did the Legion of Superheroes in the early 70s, which are some of my absolute favorite comics, he brought Timberwolf back. I guess Timberwolf died. I don't know if he actually died in the series or if they just did a retro story. But he showed up, and he had, like everybody in Legion of Superheroes, had a revamped costume that Dave Cockrum designed. And he had those wolf ears hairstyle that Wally Wood used to do in Animal Man and some of the other books.
Yeah.
And that's where Dave Cockrum moved to Marvel and was doing the X-Men. I don't know if they ever showed Wolverine without his headgear on an Incredible Hulk. But when they put him in the X-Men, Wolverine had a longer version of Animal Man's hair with those spikes going up the side and the big sideburns. And then after that, I guess everybody decided they were going to do it too. But I blame Wally Wood for it, which I never really minded until some of these people made it completely over the top.
Is Wolverine, like, retired now? I heard something. There's a female Wolverine now?
No. Well, it's his genetic... The character carrying the name Wolverine is the genetic copy of him.
A female?
I understand it's X-32. Yeah. Wolverine, as we know him, is either dead or missing or something.
That's what I heard.
And then Old Man Logan has transferred into our regular comic universe. The one that was from the future where he accidentally, like, his mind was taken over and he killed everybody. Like, everybody.
Gotcha.
Like, every single...
superhero?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sorry I haven't been reading those.
Not enough time.
So, you know, speaking of 80s characters coming back, I don't know if you guys heard about this for the upcoming seasons of Luke Cage. I think it's Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage on Netflix. They're bringing back a character as supposedly the big bad guy, and that's going to be Black Goliath.
Oh, Black Goliath. Forgot about him.
Yeah, wait, you ready?
Awesome.
Guess who's supposed to be playing him?
Sam Jackson.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, okay, good.
I can see
that.
Good. I mean, come on, that's a get. That's a huge get. Lawrence Fishburne's a fantastic actor. I can't wait to see that.
They should bring... Well, Black Lightning was in DC, so...
It was a character I really liked.
Yeah, he was okay. Yeah, blaxploitation comics. Yeah, man. Yeah. Did you ever hear this one? Did I send him the copy of it? There's this one that my buddy sent to me. It was called, like, something about Fast... It's called Fast Willie Jackson. You ever heard of Fast Willie Jackson?
I remember that.
It's a black version of, like... They got an Archie artist, Gus LeMoyne, and he did a book for a small publisher, a black publisher. It was called Fast Willie Jackson, and they were... I never saw them because they were released in, like, you know, the inner cities, I guess, in the 70s, but it's Archie... cut style, but they got, like, big pimp hats and, like, stuff like that. It's hilarious, man. You gotta see, anybody out there, check out Fast Willie Jackson. They're on eBay, but they're worth $1 million, so you're not gonna be able to buy them. But if they reprinted them, I want to see a Fast Willie Jackson movie. Okay? I want to see it right now, but anyway.
All right, well, we've been talking quite a while. It's time for a music break. Bye.
It's all about the table, everybody's even, cause there must be something you've been hiding, keeps me hiding, keeps me smiling, tidal wave, you'll sweep me to my grave, watching under me like a sea of blaze, but I will not pretend that I don't like it, I'll feel a little home somewhere inside it, careful how you shake it now, you got me by the heart. I'm having fun.
to a Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and that was Grey Market. They're a Tampa Bay area band that my wife and I saw 2 weeks ago. I bought their CD off Bandcamp. I love these guys.
All right. Anybody in there that we know? Anybody in the band that we know?
No, I don't know them. They're a young group. It's two guys. It's a drummer and a guitar player. They both sing.
We just happened to run across them, huh?
Our friend Steve Robinson, who I play a lot on the show, Steve asked if I was going to Steve Connolly's show. Steve Connolly. Steve Robinson came from a band called The Headlights. They toured with Roger McGuinn.
He came from England first.
Well, he came from England. He doesn't like to talk about that.
All right. That accent gives it away, though.
But basically, there was a band in the St. Petersburg area called The Headlights. At the time, they were called Just Another Rainbow, and they had a female singer. And she left, and Steve came in and took her place. It was a four-man band. They had two singers, Steve Connolly and Steve Robinson. They both played guitar. And at one point, Roger McGuinn saw him, was wanting to go on tour, hired them, and he did the whole Back to Rio tour. They showed up on The Tonight Show. Anyway, Steve Connolly just turned 64 years old, and he had a big birthday party at the Palladium down in St. Pete, which I've never been to. It's a really nice area. And Grey Market opened for him, and I wasn't expecting that. It was just a two-piece, but man, they had a full sound. The drummer had a MacBook. And every time before they play, he'd hit something. And it didn't sound pre-programmed or anything, but I could hear a bass and I could hear, the keyboards and stuff. But the singer can sing. I lent Dallas the CD. I wanted to go up to those guys and say, look, you guys selling CDs here? And, everybody's listening. There was a lot of different people playing, and I didn't want to approach them and scare them. So I looked them up and,
You are 10 foot tall, so you can be scary. Well,
did you ever hear when I saw Dallas's parents down in St. Petersburg?
No.
Oh, God.
My daughter was in high school, and she was down by the pier. They have a big art gallery, and she was in it. They had a high school show. And so my wife and daughter and I are coming out, and we're going across Bayshore Boulevard. And I'm walking across the street, and I see Dallas. I didn't know Dallas real well. But I walk up, and I'm like, Dallas? Oh, hey! And him and Ellie were scouting out locations to get married.
Right, because they got married. Yeah, they
down
got
there.
Married in the museum.
So I met Ellie. That was the first time I met her. And I met Dallas's mom and dad, which I was kind of thrilled about. I met them and talked. Well, I'm talking to Dallas, and Myrna takes a picture. And it's a horrifying picture. I'm standing there talking to Dallas like this, and Dallas is listening, and Ellie's on the side looking, and she always has a serene look, but she's looking, and I was kind of making fun of the picture when I saw it. I says, why is she looking like, thank God he didn't kill us? And then my daughter said, Dad, when you were walking up there, Dallas's mother pulled her purse closer to herself and kind of went to her husband. What? And Myrna's like, honey, I keep telling you not to do that. And then I just imagine walking across the street like this, approaching Dallas, I guess.
You just need to start walking across the streets yelling, FIFA!
Yeah, well, it wasn't my intention. So I'm guessing Ellie really was thinking, thank God I didn't kill him. But it wasn't what I meant. So because of that, I'm kind of sensitive to approach people I don't know.
But, okay. All right. I usually don't try to do that either,
I don't go to, hey, you. I figured it was because you were afraid you got to step on them.
That could happen.
But, everybody was listening, and my wife says, I really wanted to go talk to those guys because she liked the band as well. They had a unique sound, and sometimes, how many times have you seen a band play live and then you buy a CD they got and it kind of sucks? It doesn't have that same feel?
Yeah.
And I was wanted to see, they have several projects on there, but they're all digital downloads, which I guess my age, I don't like to do. I like to buy some physical, but they have a CD with 12 songs on it. It's $10, no charge for shipping. Okay. And when I ordered it, I got a free digital download from Bandcamp. And the digital download I got. I've been listening to it. The CD came in. The guy wrote a hand note, you know, handwritten note. Says, thanks for supporting us. It says, make sure you play it loud. Which, you don't have to. The music is really representative of what they did on the show. My wife won't give me the CD back. She's listening to it. Dallas likes it. Fantastic guitar work. Fantastic singing. Fantastic drumming. The drummer is doing all these intricate sounds, all these intricate patterns. It's not overpowering, but he basically sets up a layer for the guitar player to have a cloud to roll around on. I can't say enough about them. I was looking them up. I guess they're playing Tampa at some place next. They played in that Next Big Thing shows that they do around the area.
Okay.
So anyway, you'll be hearing a lot about them. And sorry, I've been talking. And my friend Al has something.
I just can't take it anymore. You know, I was going to talk about this, but I changed my mind. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do my own Pullapalooza. That's right. I'm going to pull my own. No, I'm just joking, everybody. Okay, I'm just going to.
Okay, hold on. If it's time for
Pullapalooza. I just went to Yancey Street. I was only going to buy a few comics.
It never works that way.
He had all these boxes of dollar comics, and then he had dollar comics under $9.99 a dollar. If he would have had comics under $10 a dollar, then he would have had a lot more empty boxes. But unfortunately, the cutting was that there's a lot that were $10. But anyway, I go, okay, I'm there. I've only got 5 books, and I'm going like, okay, Don, we can go. Then I look at the dollar boxes. I see in the back, one of the comics has this old ad. I go, oh, those are old. So, of course, I have to walk over there, and I buy 8 more comic books, you know. So,
you know, that was kind of cruel. One, it's a great sale. $9.99 and below is $1.
It is.
But Al showed me 2 books that I love that he wanted to get, but the price was $10. I'm like, one penny. It's like that Greek tragedy, that guy that basically the gods cursed and he was surrounded by water and fruit and everything, but whenever he tried to reach and touch it, it would go away.
Yep.
Yeah, and I thought that's what Yancey Street did. But nevertheless, I bought way too much stuff that I meant to, and Al did too.
All right, so here I go into the bag of goodies, which I've forgotten what I bought, but now I will remind myself. And then
Al is opening his bag of holding.
Is each here, Crackle?
Okay, this one here. Oh, the most embarrassing one of them all. I bought an issue of Charlton's Secret of Young Brides.
What?
It's a romance comic from the 60s.
Let me see this.
I haven't even looked at it. But it's got Vince Coletta. Let me see what year it's from. It's beat the you know what. I can't even see the year because it's cut off. It's falling apart. But it's an old Charlton romance comic. And it's 10 cents.
There you go.
So wow. You know, it's got to be from like either 60.
Let's take a look at this guy.
Or 15.
Yeah, 60. The early 60s.
It's got to be like
1960-something.
It's 60-something.
Yeah, it's 60-something.
Did you ever buy 10-cent comics off the rack?
I never bought 10-cent comics.
I didn't either. Remember Jim Johnson, the first time we met him, he
was talking about buying, yep.
But he didn't do it very long, I think, but he was buying it for a while. And I remember he was complaining that all of a sudden they went up 12 cents, it messed up, because I guess basically you got a quarter allowance.
Yeah,
you buy
right.
2 comics and a candy bar, and all of a sudden...
Yeah, no candy bar anymore.
Yeah, so all of a sudden the 12 cents really messed you up.
Yeah, when I was a kid... When I was a kid, and the funny thing about that is that Don brought me from, you know, the Wilson's, a subscription to, what was it, Young Weird Love. So I've got...
Yeah, we talked about it last time we did a show with Roy.
Now, where is the issue here? It's here somewhere. Let's see where it is. At any rate, some of those stories are in the Weird Love comic book, I'm sure. You know, but he had all these books, and like I see that, and I go... Oh, I'm getting it. I gotta get it. It's an old one. It's got Vince Coletta. It's got like all the Charlton guys, and I love Charlton comics. You know, I'm always posting them on my blog, and I can't find Weird Love, but it's in here somewhere. So anyway, so let me check it out and see who's in it, and I'll talk about it a little more. Because I know Vince Coletta did the first story.
I was having fun looking at some of the ads in there.
Yeah, that's fun. You know, romance comics are something I never would touch as a kid. I had no interest, even as a younger man. And I was always reading about Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, you know, did the romance comics. And sometimes Comics Journal would post a page.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, it's always, you know, people make fun of them. They draw them, and they're always dramatic poses. And it's always a girl looking at the reader crying and upset about
something. It's readable soap operas is what it is.
Well, that's the thing. It was at one point when I was trying to do a comic project, I started, inadvertently, I was looking up Alex Toth, and I saw a bunch of his romance work. And I started viewing them much different when I realized it shows conversations. And it makes a conversation very interesting.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. No, you have a very good point.
Because a lot of times when I'm saying this, I'm the king of this. Whenever you try to do a comic strip...
You're King Don.
Yeah, King, I don't... But you turn into talking heads. It's just one head on one side, one head on the other side, and people say, well, you need to make this more interesting. And it's just always bad. And I thought, well, how do you make a conversation? Well, if you look at romance comics, it's a perfect example of showing two people talking, or more. And it always keeps your interest. It always keeps it flowing. And I've actually become a big fan of looking at those.
There it is. Yeah. It goes right with this other one that I got to.
Weird Love.
This is probably Craig Yeo Publications. And he basically, you know, is going through all the weird, like, love romance comics of the 50s and 40s and 60s or whatever. The thing about these is they always got, it's like your favorite artist drawing regular people and hot girls. But, yeah, I mean, I don't read these things, I don't read them because it's just like, you know, they're dopey stories. But they are a lot of fun, and the art's always great at them. So when I saw that, I had to go get it. It's got, like, Vince Coletta, I think one of the stories might be Matt Baker, Charles Nicholas, Sal Trapani, and I can't think of who the artist is, but it's like an old Charlton romance book. And the best thing about it is now when I get home, I take a picture of it and like I send it to Pat and I go, look what I got. And he's going to be, oh man, you got that book. Oh man.
Can I just point out that in this in The Secret of Young Brides, there's an ad to become a nurse.
Yeah.
You know.
And she's got her finger sticking out.
I remember that ad so many times. Yeah.
It just seems like so funny to me that like there's an ad in here for like nursing school. But it doesn't...
You know what the weirdest one is? And it was in comic books before... It was in comic books... In this era, maybe a little earlier. It was an ad, and this woman says, if you order this pamphlet, we'll send you a live dog. And she's got a picture of an old lady with one of those little chihuahuas that fits in your hand.
What?
Yeah, they'll send you a dog.
Well, and you could order raccoons.
I'll find the ad.
You could order raccoons and monkeys. You show me those ads. We talked about it a long time. You could order monkeys through comic book ads. Live animals. Why would you want a raccoon? They're trouble.
And here you go. Here's magically, this showed up. Another book that I got, another Charlton, because I love Charlton. Ghost Manor, number 18. Okay, really creepy, you know, cover.
Doesn't that look like one of the bad guys in the old Scooby-Doo show at the beginning?
Probably.
Yeah, the beginning of the 60s Scooby-Doo.
I can't think of his name, but the ghoul.
The first one that walks out from that.
Yeah.
You know, that's when I see that, it's the first thing I thought.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but it's the something ghoul. So, because it was really funny because...
Spafan ghoul, I think, right? I don't remember. That's a bad word in Italian, I think.
It was really funny because in the... one of the Scooby-Doo movies, they actually used all of those old intro characters from the intro.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they used them in the movie.
which movie?
I think it was the first Scooby-Doo movie.
Oh, the one with the guy that played Bean was the bad guy.
No, that was the second one, wasn't it?
No, it was the first one.
That was the first. Okay, the second one.
Okay, because I don't remember that.
So anyway, I get this one. It's got a great Tom Sutton story. It's Pat Boyette. So I'm looking at the ads, and look how times have changed. It's like, hey, kids, the magic power of witchcraft. That's right, kids.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. Take a look.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
You used to see ads like that all the time.
What?
The Charlton Horror Books. Like, the magic power of witchcraft. Hey, kids. Put a spell on your friends. Only $8.98.
This is fantastic.
That's for real. I never saw that ad in Marvel. So.
You can heal yourself as witches too.
There you go.
No, Charlton usually had completely different ads than Marvel and DC.
Want to see the future? Make time run backwards or forwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, man. You know, I don't see too many ads. Well,
wait. Gavin Frost is Archbishop of the Church of Wicca with national headquarters in Salem, Missouri.
There you go.
What the crap?
Right in the book. Oh, my God. Right next to an ad for Joy Buzzers. And,
Joy Buzzers and Whoopee Cushions.
And Whoopee Cushions. And,
well, you know what one of my favorite things back in the day with, like, different magazines and comics and stuff was the ads for, like, the models, for, like, the monster models.
Yeah.
You know, like, you could get, like, you know, Dracula's...
Al has some of those.
Yeah, you have
some of those old models? Yeah. Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
They reissued them a few years ago, yeah.
That is fantastic.
But there's a Charlton book, and I'm not going to lie to you, and I will find it. I'm going to have to find it pretty soon. I'm not lying. I believe it's a Charlton book. There's a picture of the hot girl, and it says, inflatable doll.
Ah!
In a comic book, okay? Yeah. And you got all the comic authority stamp
yes, on the cover?
Yes, the comic authority.
That didn't apply to the ads.
It doesn't apply. It didn't apply to the
ads.
Yeah,
it's a doll. Inflatable doll in a comic book. Probably a Charlton. I don't know. Charlton was kind of like I wouldn't call them the sleaziest one, but they were definitely like...
Yeah,
you know,
over there. They were right there.
Yeah, they were knocking on the door or whatever.
I never saw Charlton as sleazy. It was just... I don't know. It's
low,
like,
budget, maybe.
I think it was kind of under the radar. I mean, because
under the radar, hard
kids,
to find.
Kids
maybe.
Read them. Oh no, they were around, but I don't think the people really paid attention to them a lot. You know, I mean, the authorities.
So anyway,
because some of their ads were seedy. The comics weren't really so much, but
the owners were like, the owners met in jail.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the owner of Charlie were met in jail because they were like nefarious guys or whatever. And then, if I remember, I'm gonna screw it up. Somebody can correct it if they want to. Charlton got in trouble. I don't know if it was one of them was in jail, because they got in trouble because they were putting out a magazine, like a Hit Parader magazine. And what they would do was they would transcribe the lyrics to the songs and sell you the book. And you people would buy it because they get, and then the copywriters of the song said, excuse me, but, you know, you're putting the lyrics in my songs, and you don't have the rights to do it, and you owe us X amount of money. I think that's why one of them went to jail. I'm not sure. And then when they got out, they went and paid. So anyway,
that's shady.
There's a lot of interesting stories about Charlton Carl.
Wow, I never knew that.
So we'll just leave it at that. That'll be right. I've done enough already. I've done enough damage to the show already. So, Rook, you're up.
That's
now.
Crazy.
Well, actually, one thing I wanted to bring up, I'm sorry to push in. We got a submission from Julian Fernandez, and
quite a
while ago. And I apologize, Julian.
We just discovered that forwarding the email to other members of the group came out as a different email. So I've been reading something that wasn't what we were going to talk about.
Yeah,
and that's fine. We're going to talk about that one on another episode. We've gotten two submissions, and I apologize to both of you had to wait so long. But Julian Fernandez, Rook hasn't seen it.
I've seen it.
I've seen the stuff on.
I've seen the art on the Facebook page and stuff.
And yeah.
Well, it's called Avanon, which is the main character, and it's Earth's final chapter. Now, he sent us one segment. Just to tell you a little bit about it, it's written by Julian Fernandez, who is the one contacting us, and it's illustrated by Sergi Kritzian, who... I have to say, you're fantastic, both of you. These are prose stories with spotted illustrations of paintings. I don't know exactly what medium he worked in.
It looks like it's a Photoshop or digital art. Looks like it, anyway.
It could be, but it could be a mixture. I guess he's got three or four novels, and you can buy them digitally, $2.99, which... Uh-huh. Is actually fantastic. They put these things out. I don't like reading stuff on electronic devices. I kind of scrolled through the artwork. Again, artwork is second to none, but it's got a character. I started reading the work. I didn't read the end because I didn't want to. If I read it, I'm going to blurt everything out, and I didn't want to spoil it for anybody. But the character Avanon, it starts out, he's out in the wilderness, and he's got a deer he's killed, and he's carrying that. And we're talking about some of the electronic devices. He's got a pair of goggles that, you know, help him see. He seemed like a young man, but really strong. And they're talking about the scorched earth. it's an aftermath of basically what you always read about in the late 70s and early 80s about, you know, the after effects of nuclear Armageddon, I'm guessing. While he's carrying this buck, he notices some people coming by, so he hides, and it's slavers. And all of a sudden the story switches, and he's talking with this young lady and her brother, who's been branded in the back of their neck, and they're beat, they're starving, and the slavers are taking them. They stop down for the night. So anyway, that's how the whole thing comes. There's also a mutant with the group that's got a robotic arm that they won't let him wear. And I'm thinking, this is interesting. A lot of times I read prose novels about science fiction or fantasy, not always. There's two things I really hate, is really flowery prose, where they're constantly saying, romping through the area with all the florals, you know, just stuff like that, it irritates me. The other one is when they have a lot of, they're trying to come up with colorful names of places and colorful names of people, and we're trying to do middle-age speaking, you know, yes, my lady, and all that. Sometimes it's okay. A lot of times it just sours me. Well, this doesn't have any of that. The prose that the guy writes, it's not straight-up matter-of-fact. It's of the time it is. It has its own feel and everything. I'm never lost, and the paintings go exactly the way the prose is describing. I'm reading this, and then I look at the painting after it, and I'm like, God, how did he do that? Basically, the picture in my head was what the guy's painting, and I looked at the paintings after I saw it. This reminds me of, remember Omni magazine from the 70s?
Yeah.
It's its own animal, but it has that same feel. I have to say, this stuff is second to none. I had to make myself stop reading it, because I didn't want to give any more away. I started reading about what he had done and what was happening. I'm buying them, you know.
Okay. Nice.
So, it's nice. I do, Rook, it would be good if you did read through the thing. I think this is
right
up
your
alley.
Yeah, we're going to have to do like a full show review, but, yeah. You know, I got to get the right email.
Well, when we were talking, Rook was thinking of something else we're going to talk about later, and when I showed him these, I took a couple of screenshots of it. And everybody's like, why didn't I get this? I thought I did. So that's my own fault. Julian, I'm very sorry, but I'm buying them. And I think you're impressed with the work you saw, too.
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. You sent it to me a while ago, and when you sent me the email, I couldn't find it. But then when I saw the picture, I go, oh, yeah, that was from a long time ago. That's from like a month ago or whatever. Yeah, it was a really nice job. Yeah,
well,
definitely.
It's one of the.
I'm apparently the only one that doesn't get it.
Well, I think Dallas has got them, and Dallas said he's going to add a part and talk about it, his thoughts on it. But like I said, the last episode we did, I brought up. I'm sorry, I couldn't even remember the names of this stuff. It's been a roller coaster summer.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, actually, we've been talking.
Well, one last thing. I got one last thing.
Go ahead.
We had somebody passed away recently who was a real important early Marvel Comics person. Not an artist, not a writer, not an editor. Flo Steinberg. You know who Flo Steinberg
was,
right? She was
Stan's secretary.
She was Stan Lee's secretary, but she was also did pretty much everything around the office. Talked to the artists, coordinated jobs. Very much important in the beginnings of Marvel Comics. And they have, you know, if you see pictures of her, a very sweet lady, always smiling, always nice. Worked in Marvel from like 65 to 68, left, and then came back. And, you know, every time you hear about her, she's always wonderful. All the artists loved her. You know, I think in that there was an issue of What If, where like they did What If the Fantastic Four were the Marvel bullpen. It was like, actually, Jack Lee drew her as the Invisible Woman, I believe.
Oh, on the What If series, yeah, they did What If the Marvel bullpen got the powers.
The Fantastic Four.
She ended up being the Invisible Woman.
Yeah, he ended up drawing her as the Invisible
Jack
Woman.
Jack Kirby was the Thing. Stan Lee was the Mr. Fantastic. I don't remember who the Human Torch was.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sal Brodsky or something.
Anyway, she was she was very important in the history of comics. You don't hear about her much because she just passed away. And, you know, rest in peace, Flo Steinberg. So, I just want to say that.
Very nice. Very nice. All right, anything you got, Rook?
I'm good. I'm set.
Anyway, that's it. because everything's been so busy and it's hard to get together, we've switched from weekly to bi-weekly, which, you know, hopefully we're not going to have any more blips in the schedule. So after this, wait another couple of weeks and you'll hear us again. Anyway, thanks for listening. And in the meantime,
read more comics.
My name is Mao, and with me as always,
Dr. Morbius.
From Parts Unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A Go Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
That's right.
If it's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men. We're your men. We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies because they're all great and you're all going
to
love them.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com.